There are 7 or 8 chapters in this book, and I want to talk specifically about perhaps 3 or 4 of them. One of the chapters I titled The Shadow Man, and it has to do with Lakota thinking about warfare and the warrior. War has been part of human beings for as long as we've been around. Way back when, in the dim past, when one person wanted something else that another one had, be it a tool, a weapon, or even a home or territory, that forced the other party to defend themselves. And so we developed the attitude that we had to defend ourselves. Or after a while, we developed the concept of imperialism, where we wanted to take something that belonged to someone else. In any case, as far as I'm concerned, this was the basis for war and warfare. In this day and age, it's all about killing and destruction. And we've refined warfare into a fine art. We're very specialized in how we can destroy and how we can kill. That wasn't always the case. The Plains Tribes of North America, I'm talking about that area that encompasses the current states of Nebraska, Kansas, South Dakota, North Dakota, parts of Montana and Wyoming, the Northern Plains, those tribes took or developed a different slant on war and warfare and the warrior. Over time, they made it an arena within which a man, or any combatant for that matter, could prove himself. Killing was not the objective. Proving and demonstrating one's courage and skill was the primary objective. People were still injured and killed, so there was always the threat of that. So even in that sort of a context, combat or warfare was a very daunting experience, and the prospect of being involved in combat or facing combat was still a very scary thing to face. Before Euro-Americans came to the Northern Plains, there was a lot of fighting, not as much as we are led to believe. Most of the tribes there were small, a few hundred, a couple thousand. The Lakota, the Dakota, and the Nakota, the three parts of the overall nation that are more commonly known as the Sioux, were the largest nation on the plains, probably 15 to 20,000 around 1850 or so. And because of our population, we were able to control a greater geographic area. At one time, our territory included all of South Dakota, the southern part of North Dakota, the northern slice of Nebraska, eastern Wyoming, southwest Minnesota, and northwest Iowa and southeast Montana. Hundreds and hundreds of thousands of square miles, millions and millions of acres. The Lakota were the largest part of the Confederacy. We were more nomadic than the Nakota and the Dakota. But as people who controlled a very large territory, we also had to defend it from everybody else who wanted to come in or take it away from us. Unfortunately for us, probably, most of the tribes who were our opponents or enemies were smaller than we were in terms of population. So although we did have to fight off incursion or attempts at it, we were by and large very successful in maintaining our territories, primarily because of our population, but also because of the attitude we developed being our fighting men or the warrior. Before the Europeans came, the typical confrontation between native tribes was something like this. Two groups of people came together. It was never ever the massive armies that we read about in the Civil War, for example, where tens of thousands of people were killed in one battle. It was more like 20 to 30, maybe even 50 men opposing each other on one side and a like group on the other side. And the objective was not to kill off everybody else. The objective was very simple, to prove that your medicine or the power that you had as an individual man, as an individual warrior, and as a group was better, even if it was just for that day, than the enemy that you faced. And one of the things that happened was very, very simple, but very, very difficult to do. The objective of every man who faced the moment of combat was to touch a live enemy and get away and live to tell about it. Now, if you stop to think about it, this is not as simple as it sounds, because you're risking your life, you're risking injury, you're certainly risking death. But the objective was twofold. One, it was for you to demonstrate your bravery and your courage under the most daunting circumstance. And the other was to defeat the spirit of the enemy. If you defeated his spirit, it was better than taking his life. Because once you defeated his spirit, you owned him. So that the next time he faced you and you faced him in combat, he remembers that incident in which you bested him. So that was the kind of attitude with which we approach warfare, and it's considered quaint and archaic because we didn't wantonly kill and slaughter everything in our path. We realized a long time ago how despicable warfare was, so this is what we evolved it into, and some people think it's a more civilized attitude toward warfare and a more civilized way of carrying it out. War is not civilized by any means, but we found a way to make it work for us in a positive way, as it were. Achievement in combat was a way for males of many of the Plains tribes to establish a reputation and build status in the community, especially if they wanted to be leaders. So the arena of combat was also important in that respect. And it was the way many people like Red Cloud and Gaul and Sitting Bull and Crazy Horse and Spotted Tail and a lot of other leaders rose to the positions of leadership, because they first had to demonstrate how brave they were in combat. There was a practice that evolved. It was part of the evolvement of warfare for us. And that was what is commonly called war paint. We call it face paint. Ite unkokigua, face paint. And every man's face paint was different, because every man believed he had a special power or a special helping spirit. Then more times than not, he tried to symbolize that power or that spirit in how he painted his face. So there were all kinds of variations in design. A lot of them were vertical lines, horizontal lines, or a bear paw, or something like that to denote or depict that man's power. One of the reasons that war paint was used was to draw out that aspect of yourself that was the warrior. We call it Nariwichasha, the shadow man. The shadow man is overlooked in all the discussions of warfare and native culture. There are very few people who are still aware of that aspect of our culture. But the shadow man speaks to that part of ourselves, as I said, that can do the difficult things, sometimes the ugly things, that happen within a context of warfare and combat. So the face paint, when a person put on that face paint, he was speaking to the shadow man, that it was time for that shadow man to come out and participate in the despicable act of warfare on behalf of the people. Warfare wasn't something that we did just for the heck of it. Many non-Indian anthropologists, sociologists, and historians like to say that on the Northern Plains and in North America in general, there was constant warfare between the tribes. It simply was not true. We need only consider one fact. Lakota males, at least, and most of the Plains tribes as well, had to fulfill two societal roles. One was of the provider, and the other was the protector. As a provider, he was the hunter. He had to go out and procure the material for food, shelter, and clothing. That was how he made a living for his family. He had to be able to make his own weapons. He had to learn how to track animals, know the migration patterns, and then go out and actually do the hunting, and then bring the raw material back. This aspect of him, his role and his responsibility as a hunter, probably consumed 75 to 80% of his time. So when he stopped to think about it, there wasn't much time left to be a warrior, to be imperialistic or otherwise. So that sort of dispels the myth that many non-Indians hold on to, that we'd live for warfare, and that simply wasn't the case. Nonetheless, we had to protect ourselves. So when it was time to fight, we did that. And doing that, the male fulfilled the other aspect of himself as the warrior.